Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today.
Hello and welcome to The Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent, a southeastern suburb of London. I'd like to invite you to attend one of our services. We meet each Sunday for the Divine Service at 10:30 a.m. If you live in the Glasgow area, I also serve as vacancy pastor for St. Columba Lutheran Church in East Kilbride, and they meet each Sunday morning at 11 a.m. So come and pay us a visit if you live in either of those locations. If not, check out our website, lutheran.co.uk. Go to the directory button, find the congregation closest to you, and pay them a visit. I know you will be warmly welcomed. Also, I'd like to thank you for your prayerful and your financial support for Lutheran Radio UK, for without your prayers and your contributions, we wouldn't be able to carry on this ministry of bringing the love and joy of Jesus to folks around the world. Again, we thank you and deeply appreciate your prayers and your support. Last week, we welcomed Dr. Joel Bierman to Lutheran Radio. Dr. Bierman is professor of systematic theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Last week, we talked about the Sabbath rest, and we've invited him back to continue our conversation, and we are going to aim more specifically on work that he has been doing on Joseph Pieper and how his work relates to the Christian and Christian rest. Dr. Bierman, welcome back to the Lutheran Inquisitor.
Good to be with you once again.
We were talking before we've come on air about some research that you're doing in preparation for a book, and you mentioned you're writing and it will involve some material about a fellow named Joseph Pieper. Could you tell us who this guy is? I've never heard of him before, so can you help expand my horizons?
Sure. Joseph Pieper was a Roman Catholic moral theologian. Roman Catholicism, unlike Lutheranism, has a rather robust history of really careful thought about moral theology. It's an entire category. We have like systematic theology and practical theology and exegetical historical theology. They also have moral theology. And the whole point of that is thinking about ethics and living and how we operate. And so Joseph Pieper was a moral theologian, but more than that, he was actually more of a philosopher. He's also very interested in questions of aesthetics, beauty, and also questions about art and how those things fit. And so he was a very interesting guy who lived in the mid-20th century. I encountered him by reading things about ethics and about questions about, you know, moral living. And I found Lutheran people like Gilbert Mylander and others would frequently quote from Joseph Pieper. So that's what kind of got me interested in him. So I started reading him. And he's done a lot of work, especially on areas of like the cardinal virtues. So he's being a Roman Catholic, he's a Thomist. And so he follows Aristotelian thought on a lot of things. And that definitely shapes a lot of his thinking. That's where his philosophy is very Aristotelian or Thomistic that way. But one of the things he's interested in is the cardinal virtues. Most people are familiar with the seven deadly sins. Well, historically in the medieval church, there were also seven virtues to counter the seven deadly sins. But then there were also another list of seven virtues, four coming from Aristotle, the four cardinal virtues, which would be prudence and courage and justice and temperance, then coupled with those, the three theological virtues of faith, hope, and love. And so Pieper is very interested in that and has explored that quite a bit. He's got a book called The Four Cardinal Virtues, which is really helpful and really a very worthwhile read. But the other thing that Pieper wrote is a little book called Leisure, The Basis of Culture. And this is one of those books that when I first read it, maybe 15, 20 years ago, kind of blew my mind, because when I went through the seminary, I had never heard of Joseph Pieper either. In fact, the only Pieper I knew about was Franz Pieper, who is the rather famous, I guess, LCMS theologian, one of the early followers of Walther. He was a disciple of Walther, and when Walther's generation passed away into history. Then Pieper's generation picked up the mantle. And so Pieper was the next generation of our LCMS forebears. And Franz Pieper, or as it gets translated into English sometimes, Francis Pieper, wrote the rather significant three-volume work on Christian dogmatics, which is has been the standard theological source book for systematic training in the LCMS for generations, for almost a century. And Pieper has had a huge influence. Franz Pieper has had a huge influence. So that's the Pieper I knew about. But Joseph Pieper is, as far as I know, no relation. He's a Roman Catholic, and he's doing his work in moral theology from a Thomistic standpoint on Aristotle. And so when I read this book, Leisure, The Basis of Culture, I was just totally taken by surprise by everything that Joseph Pieper's up to because of his whole premise, and it's very surprising, the moves he makes. So that's a little bit who Joseph Pieper is.
So, again, you don't think of, well, number one, when we talk theology, you don't really think of leisure, or I don't. And as the basis of society, what does he mean by that? And how were you blown away by that?
Yeah. Well, that's just an excellent question, because when I first read the title, in my naivete, I was actually in an impression that maybe this was an ironic title, that he's slamming the 20th century culture, that we've made leisure the basis of everything and shame on us and look what a mess we've made of it because we're so obsessed with leisure and of inactivity and self-indulgent kind of a therapeutic lifestyle. I wrongly assumed that that's what he meant. But in fact, there's no irony in his title whatsoever. He means it. He's arguing that leisure is the right understanding. It is the basis of culture. But the key, of course, is how we define leisure. And so the foundation for Pieper is back in Aristotle. And Aristotle's defining leisure quite differently than how we hear it today. And this is the move that Pieper is making as well. So Joseph Pieper is saying leisure should be understood as what is the Greek word scholia. And we get the word scholar and we get the word school from this. But that's what leisure meant, was scholia, which was a sense of contemplation, a sense of being able to sit back and think about things going on in the world, as the ability, the freedom to be able to consider how things work, what's true, what's real. And so in Aristotle's day, way back BC, you had most people were busy working just to survive. Farmers, artisans, shopkeepers, you work. And only a few people, a handful, ever had time to be able to stop and not have to work, be able to actually to think about things and think about what's the point of life? Why do things work the way they work? And to do what we might nowadays call even scientific research. That was the province of only a few elite. And Aristotle, of course, considered himself one of those elite and delighted in being that. And so he saw work as being servile and negative and antithetical to being truly human. So Aristotle's whole point was that when you're really living the human life rightly, then you are living in leisure. You're living being able to contemplate things, being able to think about things, being able to delight in things. And that's the whole basis. That's the foundation. That's the goal. So you work to be able to have leisure. And so what Joseph Pieper is arguing is we need to retrieve this idea of leisure being the goal instead of living in a world that he labels total work. And this is where things got really interesting for me, because I had never thought about it this way, because being a good Lutheran, I'd always grown up with the idea of vocation, work hard, and a little bit of the Max Weber Calvinist kind of work ethic thing. Work hard, and we're Americans for crying out loud. This is our whole lifestyle. Work, accomplish a lot, get things done, and then you can rest so you can work harder again. That's a culture of total work. And leisure is antithetical to this. And what Joseph Pieper is doing is he is attacking this world of total work and says, wrong. That's not what humans are supposed to do. Humans are built for contemplation. Humans are built to be living in sync with God. And now we're getting back to this whole Sabbath idea of being in sync, in tune, in harmony. That's what leisure starts to be for Pieper. And Pieper contends that this is the goal, that we live for Sabbath, seventh day, and the work is merely to get us there. And this is the contrast that Joseph Pieper sets up. And that's what blew my mind, to think about work not as, in a sense, the whole point, but as merely a means to something else. And that's what Pieper's up to.
So you mentioned the Greek word scholia, from which scholar, school come from? Is he talking about the intellectual exercise of learning? You mentioned contemplation. Would that be meditation, prayer, or what does he see by this?
Right. And for Aristotle, these things kind of start running together. Now, Pieper, writing centuries, millennia after Aristotle, is looking at this through a Christian lens, and he's saying, yeah, the contemplation is still part of it, and the intellectus, the intellectual work, is still part of it. So Pieper is a huge proponent of the intellectual life and the freedom of the intellect and the making a case for this and making a, in a sense, an apologetic that this is a good thing. So Pieper makes no, he's not ashamed at all about the intellectual contemplative life. To him, that is what it means to be really human. But what Pieper introduces, though, is the Christian element. He says, but this only happens when you're in Christ. This only happens when you're rightly related to God. So Aristotle could never really get there. He had this right idea. He had the right sense. He was on track with his natural law sensitivity, but he didn't see the fulfillment that can come only in Christ. So then for Pieper, you're right. Prayer, meditation, worship is the highest form of leisure. That's when we're living, understanding who God is and thinking about God and contemplating God and delighting in God. So heavy intellectual pursuits in theology, this leisure, that's worship of God. And a divine service on a Sunday, this is a leisurely activity, not because it's got nothing to do. No, that's not the whole point of leisure. Leisure is not inactivity. Leisure is not indolence. Leisure is not laziness. Leisure is living in tune. Leisure is using your mind to contemplate. And that's what good worship is. We're worshiping God with our hearts and our lips and with our minds. That's what leisure is. And that's what it means to live this a life of scholia, of true leisure. That's what Joseph Pieper is up to.
And one of the things I love about the worship service, the divine service, is it gives us a chance to slow down. One of the things I constantly have to tell myself leading the service is slow down. You're not in a huge hurry. Catch a breath. Let there be times of silence. And it may be the only time you or members in the congregation have this week of just quietly sitting there. Is that part of what he's talking about, or am I just going off into mysticism?
No. It's not mysticism. And so this is what's fascinating to me, because I've always been kind of suspicious of the mysticism aspect, but there is this reality of this simply delighting in the time to recognize God's presence and to rejoice in God's presence and to celebrate that. That's a piece of this. And so you're quite right. A good Sunday service, a good divine service has time for this rest and this leisure and this inactivity. That's a part of it, which is so funny because, especially in my American context, we have a lot of congregations where there's the magic 60-minute rule, and you've got to have everything done in 60 minutes. And if you go past that, you ruin their schedule. The whole point of right worship is this is the culmination. This is what you're living for. And we simply take the time it takes. We don't keep track of time. In a sense, time evaporates and should be gone during the divine service. That's how it should be operating. That's the right attitude toward it.
I certainly understand that. My first parish was in Chicago, and I often got told, kickoffs at noon, Padre, keep it moving.
You bet. Especially during football season and there's a kickoff at noon, you got to get home in time for the first kick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you mentioned about vocation too. How did he see vocation fitting into this? Or was that, again, just part of this work that didn't appeal to him or didn't give you time for this contemplation?
In a lot of the literature on work and on leisure, the standard move is to set them in contrast to each other as an either or. So either you focus your life on work and you go out and you try to accomplish stuff and get things done and be a good American and get a lot done on your list, or no, you do the Aristotelian thing and you focus on leisure and contemplation and rest. And so there's this contrast. Is it Sabbath or is it work? And my contention is, I think that's missing the entire point. I would contend that God did create man to work, and that work, in the sense of vocation, is integral to the very definition of what it means to be human. So there's an inherent aspect of work that is part of our humanity. And that's not negative, because work, as we mentioned in our previous discussion, work is negative only because of the fall. It's not inherently a bad thing. In fact, most of us delight in working. We recognize that work is part of what we're here for. And I think we've all experienced, you work hard at something you enjoy doing and accomplish something, there's a sense of satisfaction in it. You know, a day's hard labor feels good. It's what we're built for. And we become restless when we don't have anything to do. It's a truism. You can drive a man crazy simply by making him unemployed. Take away his work and he loses his direction. Work is part of what we're here for, but it's not everything. It's not the only thing. And so Pieper reminds us that, wait, there's this leisure aspect. There's this contemplation. There's this in-tuneness. There's just simply delighting in what God has given, which is what worship is, you see. Worship is a delight in God and a delight in creation, which is a good excuse then for the arts and for music and for good music and good art in worship as part of worship, because we're delighting in the creation and all that God has done and is doing. So getting the balance here, or getting the correspondence between the two, to me, that's the ticket. And that's what I see Luther doing, frankly. Luther understood vocation, but Luther also had a good sense of this idea of living in a Sabbath reality with God and simply delighting in God. Luther was more in tune with this than we realize. And so it's not a matter of stop working and go to church. It's a matter of delight in the creation, delight in the vocation, delight in the relationships. That's Sabbath living. And we have a focus on that during the divine service on a Sunday morning when we receive God's gifts, delight in each other's presence, and then prepare for another week of service in God. But we don't leave the Sabbath behind. We don't leave the leisure behind. We live all of our life this kind of an awareness of who we are, what it means to be human, what it means to live before God and before creatures. And it starts to pervade how we do everything. So instead of simply working to get our job done, we work to serve our neighbor. We work because God has given me this work, and we see our vocations differently now. They're part of what it means to be human. They're part of what I'm here to do. And we look at work differently, and I think we look at our rest differently, because we see them all in the context of God's creative purpose. Is that all kind of making sense?
Sure. And I just want to go back. You mentioned earlier aesthetic theology, or the theology of beauty. And I've heard that being talked about a lot lately. And I'm not quite sure what that means, but I think this is what you're talking about. Music, art, delighting in your hiking in the Rocky Mountains. Is that what that's all about? Is seeing God's hand in all of those things?
Precisely. And this is why aesthetics is rightly coming back and getting a little bit more attention again, especially if we understand the transcendentals. And this has all got roots back in Greek thinking, but I would argue it's got roots in the very structure of the world itself. And that's why the Greeks stumbled across it. They didn't invent it. They just discovered it and articulated it. It was built into the creation as part of the natural law that God has just established. So we have the good, the true, and the beautiful, the three classic transcendentals that are simply there. And they're just part of God's reality at work in the world. What is true is God's truth. What is good is what God establishes. And what is beautiful is what God creates and calls beautiful. So good art is in sync with this. And good theology is in sync with this. And good intellectual work is in harmony with all this. And it all starts to hang together. So a good divine service, and see, this is where it gets interesting for Christians. A good divine service then should be an indulgent celebration of excellent music, excellent work, beautiful structures. So there's a case to be made here for spending money on art. Rome gets this better than we do in the Lutheran Church. There's a case to be made for beautiful architecture, simply because it's delighting in the wonder of God's good creation and in the wonder of God working through people to make things that are beautiful, which are in sync with his purposes. It all starts to hang together here.
Okay, so allow me to play devil's advocate then. We live in a world which is messy, which quite frankly often is ugly. We live in a world that is full of death and decay and rot. So how as a Christian then can we see God's hand at work in that? Or are we called then to help correct that?
Yes. And so the suffering is very much part of this broken world. We acknowledge it. We know it's real and we don't deny it. We're not playing a kind of, it doesn't exist. No, evil's very much, it exists. And it exists because of the Genesis 3 tragedy of the fall. We've pulled hell down on ourselves. We've done it by our own willful rejection of God's plan. And yet God's plan is still all around us. It's been messed up. It's been twisted and taken off its foundation, but it's still around us. And we see it and we taste it sometimes. And so we live in this now, not yet, this between time. Christ has come, but the fulfillment hasn't been fully initiated yet. We're waiting for that. And it hasn't been brought to its completion. It's been initiated, but not brought to its completion. We're waiting for that. And in the meantime, we live in this funny in-between time. Some days we suffer and we feel a great deal of pain. Other days we really delight in what God's done. And sometimes it's both at once. We're living always in that in-between time. So as Christians, we acknowledge the reality of suffering. We acknowledge the reality of evil, but we proclaim that Christ has overcome this. And we look forward to the day when he fully brings everything to fulfillment at the last day. And in the meantime, we push against the effects of sin. This is what Jesus did in his own ministry. He heals people, one leper, one cripple at a time, because that's what you do. You fight against what's wrong. So Christians then push against the brokenness of sin. We push against racial injustice. We push against social injustice. We push against poverty. We push against suffering and disease and malnourishment and war. We push against all of these things which are violations of God's good creation and God's good plan, and we resist those things and seek to overcome them. That's what Christians do. And they do this not in the name of social justice, but in the name of Christ, in the name of God's plan for his creation. So we do a lot of the same things the world might be doing, but with a different attitude and different understanding, and I would argue even with a different sense of our place in all this. We're not making it happen. We're simply God's tools, but this then begins to make us see all of our work, all of our activity, even all of our rest and leisure in the light of God's purposes. That's what Joseph Pieper is up to. And so for my move then is not to say one or the other, but see our work and see our rest and see our leisure all together as part of what it means to be human in God's purposes.
And it strikes me that we live in a society that's busy screaming at each other. They're not listening. They're not making rational arguments. They're just making accusations. And as you say, we are, I suppose, kind of in the middle of that. And, you know, using the Scalia, again, I'm just trying to think in my ministry, I'm being selfish here. In my ministry, can you give me some hints as how I might try to break through some of that screaming and dissonance to show them God's beauty, to show them God's peace, to show them how they should be contemplating on the Lord?
Yeah, this is the driving question we've got is how does the Christian actually reach a culture that's becoming increasingly disinterested in Christian truth and thinking Christian truth doesn't apply. I think one of the best things we can do in the church is actually to model what it means to live in relationship with God and with one another, and that our churches need to be very deliberate about becoming places of caring for one another and of caring for the world around us and of not keeping score about where people stand on the issues and whether we agree with them or not. That's really not important when it comes to showing God's grace and God's mercy to those who need it. We simply deliver the goods. This is what the early church did. And the early church became known because look how they care for each other. And people were attracted to the church because it was so different than the world around. The church today needs to be different than the world around, not one more special interest group demanding its rights and trying to add to the vitriol of the current discussion by saying, no, this is God's way of doing it. We simply need to live it and portray it and let our own witness and the force of the truth of our continuity and the genuineness of how we live make the impact. It won't happen in a day or a week or a few years, but over generations of the church being like that, that's going to make an impact on the world around us far more profound than simply a new apologetics textbook or a better way to make an argument.
So you've mentioned this book about leisure. Why should we actually spend time reading a book about leisure and its impact upon the Christian life?
Yeah, that's an important thing to bring up. Sometimes in our own circles, we read the authors we trust, and we don't look much beyond those kinds of trusted, you know, authors we like or the publishing houses we like. And I'd really encourage your listeners to take the time to actually pick up this book by Joseph Pieper called Leisure, The Basis of Culture. It's quite short. It's like 100 pages, and it's not difficult. Yes, he's a philosopher, but it's accessible. And just read it. Don't resist, but just read it and see what you think of his argument, because he makes us rethink some things and helps us reevaluate things in ways that enrich our lives. He celebrates the idea of festival and the sense that a festival is a delighting in the goodness of the creation and the goodness of the Creator. And Pieper makes this really interesting argument that non-Christians can't really celebrate a festival. They have nothing to base it on. Because every festival has to have some sort of religious foundation, or there's no foundation for it. You're just making it up. It's sort of like when the communists try to celebrate May Day. What's the point? You're celebrating the worker? What's that mean? But to celebrate God the giver, and to celebrate God and what he's done for us, and then to delight in the festival we have together around God's gifts, that's beautiful. That's the kind of stuff Pieper talks about. And when you read Pieper, he makes you rethink some things that you've maybe taken for granted or maybe assumed without really giving it much thought. And that's why I think it's really helpful to read some of these authors that push us outside of ourselves a little bit. Especially in, like I said, a Lutheran context where maybe we only know Franz Pieper and the dogmatician, it's helpful to read another Pieper who has such a fresh way of looking at things. Years ago, one of my teachers, I never had him in the classroom, but I learned a lot through his writing, is Gilbert Mailander. He's written extensively. He's a big fan of Joseph Pieper. And our sister seminary here in the LCMS is up in Fort Wayne. He was invited to do a lecture in Fort Wayne at a symposium, a rather large gathering. So he titled his lecture, Learning from Pieper. And he just read outtakes from Joseph Pieper through this whole lecture and then talked about it. But he didn't disclose that it was Joseph Pieper. He just said Pieper, knowing his audience would assume he was talking about Franz Pieper. And so he wrote this rather beautiful essay exploring Pieper and Joseph Pieper and putting all the good things we can learn from him. And then only at the very end of the lecture did he disclose that this was not Franz Pieper, but Joseph Pieper. And I have imagined how that must have gone over in that context where people are like, oh, you burned us, because we never saw that coming. And I've just always been delighted in the move that Gilbert Mailander makes when he sets Franz Pieper over against Joseph Pieper. But there's a lot to be learned from Joseph Pieper about what it means to be human, what it means to delight in one another, and what it means to simply live this life that God has intended for us in harmony with the creation, with our Creator, and with one another, and delighting in this. That's what good worship should be. That's what a life well lived should be. We dig into the vocations God has given us. We delight in doing them for the service of those around us, knowing that they come from God. God is the one who's given us those vocations. And what a joy it is to do what God has put you here to do. Then things start to click. And that's what leisure looks like. That's what it feels like. And it's an absolute joy to live life that way.
Dr. Bierman, thank you for this leisurely walk through leisure. We appreciate that. And I bet those folks at the symposium were thinking, jeepers creepers, where'd you get those peepers? We thank you for your time. We thank you for joining us. And again, we pray God's richest blessings upon your work at Concordia Seminary. And again, we really do appreciate your being with us again on the Lutheran Inquisitor.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. I always enjoyed the conversation. Talking theology is always fun.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.